the basics, getting your name and
Shirley,
where you were born and so on. You gave me the material and the thing that you wrote, but...
You want it on the tape?
Yeah.
Very well. Name, Eileen Tallman. Born January 19th, 1913, in Montreal.
And you came from a family which was first or second generation Canadian?
Second generation Canadian.
Right. And where did they come from originally?
Mother's people came from Ireland, Scotland. My father's people were Pennsylvania Dutch.
And did you move to B.C. when you were young, or were you mostly looking...
No, we moved from Montreal to Toronto when I was very young, and I went to school in Toronto and began work there. Was hired first as a trade union organizer in Toronto in 1940, and then it was 1943 that I came to Vancouver for 4 years.
Right. Can you describe your first job and how you became involved in trade union organizing? Was it through your workplace situation?
It wasn't through my first job. My first job was a junior teacher in a Toronto business college. And after that, I worked for a number of years in offices. I tried to interest some of them in organizing without any success, except a few of the men I remember in one place were interested. But they got a $5 a month raise, and that ended it. So it was not from the workplace that I became that interested. It was from my political activity.
You became involved in the CCF.
Yes, in the actually I belonged to an organization called the New Youth Association of Canada in 1934, and it was a predecessor of the youth movement of the CCF, Cooperative Commonwealth Youth Movement, which I believe we affiliated with them in 1935. And through reading and our educational work, naturally, I became interested in the importance of trade union activity, because it was always apparent to me that a socialist party had to have a pretty strong base amongst working people. And naturally, organized working people were the best way to get them together and have that base.
Right. Why were you drawn to the CCF or to this youth group? Was it...
Well, in a rather peculiar way, I was working for a lady who happened to be a CCF member, and she got me interested in taking part in dramatic skits, which were all about the trials and tribulations of the Depression in those days. I had been interested in dramatics at high school, and through these skits, which we put on at CCF functions in various places, I became friends with the young people that I was associated with, and they persuaded me then to join them in the New Youth Association, and I was a member of that organization until the Second World War.
You did not come from a trade union family?
No, I did not. In fact, my father was always a conservative in politics. My mother was not political at all, but my dad and I used to have a lot of kidding back and forth about politics until he died, and that was the first time that the CCF won the riding in which we lived. It was after his death.
So the two of you worked at odds with each other within the...
Good-natured odds.
Yeah. Hmm. That's interesting. So you were a CCFer, and then you became interested in trade union organization. How did you become actually involved in the trade union movement?
Well, in the mid-30s, you will recall, The CIO started up in the States and had great success in organizing mass production workers in steel, rubber, auto, and so on. It wasn't too long before the CIO came into Canada and helped workers to organize there, because it was the same situation. The trade union movement was practically limited to craft organization, and all of the steel industry and auto industry, packing house industry, rubber industry, you could almost name it, was unorganized. Now the CCF, of course, realized the importance of helping the trade unions to get organized. And while we didn't, very many of us, take part in direct organization when the CIO first came into Canada, we became interested in the volunteer way. And now very often that would be, for instance, limited to drumming up financial support for trade unions that were on strike. And through that sort of activity, I became acquainted with a lot of actual trade union people in the Trades and Labor Congress. Yeah, donations and so on to strikes. Yeah. It was at this time that the Ontario CCF formed a CCF Trade Union Committee. And one of the very active people in the CCYM, Fred Dowling, was named chairman of it, and I was secretary. So this linked our CCYM activity with the work of the party in the trade unions. And as years went on, a number of CCYM people became full-time organizers. Fred Dowling himself became the Canadian director of the United Packing House Workers Union.
So you began as a volunteer organizer, and then, or volunteer worker, and then you became an organizer. How did that process happen? Were you asked by the trade union to organize?
In 1940, the Steel Workers Organizing Committee had its Canadian offices in the Manning Chambers Building in Toronto. And the director of that union, C.H. Millard, was asked so frequently by the bank clerks when he went in to do his banking across the road when he was going to assist them to organize, that he finally asked me if I would be interested in taking on this job. Well, I was working at the time, but I resigned from my office job, and that was the beginning of my full-time work in the trade unions. And it had to start from scratch. So you might say that it wasn't initiated by the union itself, but by requests from bank employees. We, first of all, had to learn a good deal about the conditions under which the employees were working in order to develop organizational literature. And I spent some time doing that before we actually started organizing. And the technique that we used to begin was to mail a leaflet to the tellers in every branch bank in Toronto, asking them to contact us. And it mushroomed from there. The response was more than we could have ever dreamed of. The word spread to Montreal, where the local representative of the steel workers had visits from bank clerks there and helped them to organize. We sent out eventually a leaflet to every branch bank in Canada. This was in 1941, and we had a fair response from as far away as Vancouver. And while we hadn't any local formed in Vancouver at the time, we kept in touch with active people in most of the chartered banks by mail.
How did you get hold of information like people's names, names of tellers, people who might be interested in organizing? Was it mostly through them contacting you and then getting?
Yes, from our initial, we had the initial group that wanted help, and they all knew people in other banks who might be interested. Now, we must remember that at this time, the tellers in the banks were men, all men. And it was the men who showed the most interest in organizing.
Do you feel that one of the reasons that they were interested might be because other men in other situations, such as industrial situations, were moving really rapidly into unions?
Well, yes. They had only to compare their own conditions with what was happening in other plants and places that were unionizing. And it's hard to believe today, but $25 a week was a better than average salary for tellers with all the responsibility they had. This is getting too far off the story you want, I guess, but it's a story in itself of the first Canadian bank strike in Montreal in 1942. And this was written up by a pamphlet which I wrote after the strike. And if you can read six-point type, which was all we could afford in those days, you can read it one of these times.
Well, that would be really interesting. Maybe we can get back to that a bit when we talk about experiences out here and comparing ways of organizing.
Right.
Because I think that's a really useful experience because people are doing that kind of, trying to do that kind of organizing now.
Right. That's the interesting thing, that it's taken all this time, however, for organization to get going again.
Right. Yeah. Both by the CLC and people outside of it.
That's right. Sarawak and the CLC.
Okay, so your first experience was with the bank workers, and that was essentially a defeat.
It was a defeat because we lost the strike in Montreal, and despite the fact that we had 400 out of the 600 employees in the union, there was no legislation at that time which required the bank involved, which is the Banque Canadienne Nationale, to negotiate with the union. And between pressure brought on the employees who were on strike by the company and various others, the strike was lost.
Because they had no guarantee that there'd ever be negotiations or a settlement?
Well,
the bank wasn't forced to do that.
No, and Once the strike was broken, there was no organization left. The bank had already transferred or fired a good many of the union leaders.
So after the experience with the banks, where did you next?
Well, then the steel workers assigned me to assist with the drive to organize the John Inglis War Plant in Toronto, which had some 17,000 workers, about half of them being women. They made munitions of all kinds. This drive was already started, and it involved competition between the steelworkers and the machinists, which eventually came to a vote, and the steelworkers won it.
Was that competition essentially between an industrial union and a craft union?
Not really, because the machinists organized industrially as well, but it was, I suppose, a CIO-AFL rivalry, because steel was affiliated to the CIO and the machinists to the AFL.
Right. How did the organizing campaign work in that area? Did people use similar techniques, leaflets?
Yes, we handed out leaflets at the plant with the help of employees, and we had shift meetings because it was a three-shift operation. We set up a network of union stewards in all the various buildings, and it was through really the stewards, once you get the thing started, it's the stewards that carry on the rest of the organizing campaign, but somebody has to initiate it.
So the process in both of these areas was, well, in the first you were contacted by the workers themselves, but mm-hmm. the union going in and initiating a process, developing it a bit, and then in a sense the bulk of the organizing being done by the workers on the
themselves on
themselves.
The job. Yes.
Right.
There has to be a certain timing to this, though, when the employees no longer fear to come out in the open.
What's the threshold around that? Signing up a certain number of people?
Or? It's hard to say, because each case is really different. But in, as I recall the John Inglis campaign, the workers became involved themselves fairly early on. This may be one of the differences between white-collar workers and plant workers, in that the plant workers are a bit more militant and aggressive on their own behalf. We had a lot of very active and good women stewards in that drive, and they went on to become members of the executive of the union.
Right.
I might say that we also organized the office workers of that plant at the same time, and I was actively involved in negotiating the first union agreement for the office staff.
Right, and were the office staff mostly women?
Yes, and as in most offices, the lesser paid, more lowly classifications are generally held by women. But we had quite a few highly skilled men in the office union who were draftsmen, engineering assistants, this sort of classification. And they tended to be the ones who gravitated towards the leadership of the union.
Do you feel that the fact that there were women working within the production plant itself and women in the office facilitated organizing the women office workers?
Oh, yes. I think that unless the plant workers had been active in getting the office workers involved, they would have, as they have in so many others, just stayed unorganized and separate. And of course, this is pretty well the history of office workers for another reason, not particularly lack of interest, but the labor legislation, and I think this applies throughout Canada, required a separate bargaining unit for office workers from the plant workers. theoretically on the basis that their interests were not the same. And so once you divided them in this way, and you had to have separate organizing drives, separate certification, which didn't coincide in timing and all that, it became more difficult to organize the office workers.
Right, because they wouldn't be part of a whole sweep.
That's right.
That's really quite interesting. What effect did the fact that there were two different unions organizing within one plant have on the drive? Did it facilitate it, or did it hold it back?
I think it always holds it back, to be quite honest. But there were differences in the approaches. I don't think this is really the place to go into all of them right now, but there were... the steelworkers always considered themselves more aggressive than the AFL. And they could point to the fact that they really were the ones that got the basic steel industry organized.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, did people talk a lot about there being differences? The reason I'm interested is that it's something that happened mm-hmm. consistently in this period when there was...
I'm sure they must have, because eventually they had to make a choice, and so they had to be persuaded either by leaflets handed out by the rival unions or at meetings, or by the type of leader that came up through the employees for either union. This probably was a major factor.
Right. Can we talk a bit about that? What kind of organizers did the union send in? What kind of organizers did people respond to? What kind of qualities were necessary to get people to sign up and involved in a union drive?
Well, there's certainly a great deal of diversity between union organizers, but I suppose one of the basic qualifications is that you have a sincere interest in the welfare of the employees, that you are obviously prepared to work hard, that... you are honest with them at all times. Now, eventually in the Steelworkers Union, of course, most of the organizers came out of the plants or the offices. And so they had a proving time to show whether they had good or bad leadership. And it was only after perhaps many years as a officer, a volunteer officer of the local union, that anybody got a full-time job. We were in, as it were, on the ground floor, because there weren't any real organized, there wasn't a base of organized plants. But as soon as there was, then the organizers tended to come out of the plants or the offices.
That would be very important, because they would be really in touch with the conditions.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. After Inglis, where did you then move? That was a success, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for a few.
Why was that a success against the failure of the banks? Was that in part a question of legislation, the fact that it was maybe one plant that was being organized?
Well, it was because it was wartime. They couldn't afford to have a strike in a plant like that, and they didn't. And the government had made by then provision that if you won a vote, they'd made provision for a vote, and the fact that negotiations had to follow if a union secured a majority of employees. That was the difference.
So it was facilitated.
Yeah, and by the necessities of keeping production going during the war. Well, the reason that I then switched to Vancouver in 1943 was that I had a sort of a nervous breakdown from working so hard. We used to have shift meetings at midnight and be up handing out leaflets at 6 a.m., so there was not very much sleep in that drive. And my Vancouver session was more or less a sort of a, quotes, rest from actual organizing. And I was assigned to do administrative jobs, training union officers in their duties, such as, say, financial secretaries, treasurers, and doing all the publicity for the steelworkers in organizing. Initiated a paper for the BC locals called Steel, which carried on for 3 years, I guess. And then the Western Provinces News was incorporated in the Canadian edition of the paper.
Right. What areas was steel organizing at this time? What kind of plants?
The plants were quite small machine shops.
And this was war industry?
Well, most of them, I suppose, their products would be designed for the war.
Right.
Almost from the time that I arrived in Vancouver, I became active in the CCF here and was secretary of the Trade Union Committee for BC for several years. It was quite an important phase of history, actually, because when the war started, the Communist Party, or the Labor Progressive Party, as it subsequently became known, decided that they wanted the influence in all the basic industries in BC, and their members were successful in the Canadian section of the International Woodworkers of America, largest operation in BC, in the mine mill and smelter workers, which covered the mining, in the shipbuilding, Boilermakers Union, in the Fishermen's Union, the United Fishermen and Allied Workers, and in a smaller industry called, I think it was the Molders and Foundry Workers Union. It was a supply industry to other shipyard and metal plants. The reason that the CCF Trade Union Committee decided to encourage CCF members in the unions to challenge the leadership of the Communist Party was not due to the political, how shall we say, political theory of the CCF and the Communist Party as such, but because the differences of tactics of these two political organizations led to different policies, contrasting policies, in the labor movement itself.